Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Mormon Matters Podcast. This is Dan Weatherspoon. One of the things happening in Mormonism today is a really interesting conversation about women and the priesthood, especially originating from a group called Ordained Women. One of the things that's come up recently is a plan at the October conference to have women line up and attempt to gain entry into the priesthood meeting. And they've got some neat and interesting ideas about why they think this is an important and a good thing to do. But it has generated some debate. There's people that are, you know, critiquing that particular type of action. There's been some online pushback and escalation of feelings and things like that. So we just thought it would be fun to get a couple of the ordained women leaders here along with myself and somebody else and just discuss what's happening and the larger question of women's ordination and full participation in the church and all that different kind of stuff as we go. So this is a hot topic, and I have brought my good conversation partner and many-time person here on Mormon Matters with me again, and that's Christine Haglund. Christine, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Dan. Nice to be here.
Tell us about just the quick rundown, dialogue editor, etc.
I am the editor of Dialogue, and I live in Massachusetts with my three children, and
active blogger, Facebooker, you name it.
Yeah, yeah. I indulge my ADHD regularly on social media. How's that?
Love it, love it. Well, thank you. We always love your perspectives, and appreciate you being here to help me host this. Danielle Mooney, you've been on the show twice, I believe. It was Theosis. And what was the other one? Was it, Adam God?
Yes, and also Salvation. So this
is actually the fourth time. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Well, you're one of my favorite doctrinal experts, or at least a deep reader, deep thinker in that. But you happen to be part of this ordained women movement. And would you quickly remind everybody a little bit about your background and maybe just do a quick thing about when you got involved with ordained women?
Sure. So I live in Boston, not far from Christine, actually. And I live here with my husband. I'm currently taking some prerequisite courses, including a very fun statistics class.
I remember stats.
Yeah. And I'll be applying to grad school this year for nurse midwifery. But I also have just a strong vocational love for Mormon history and Mormon theology and doctrine. And so I like to spend a lot of time reading into that.
And when did ordained women become a part of official part? Or when did you officially become part of that?
Yes. So last spring, I submitted one of the first profiles in the initial batch of profiles that went up when the site went live, and offered as well at that same time to help with anything that Kate and the other women, Kate Kelly, and the other women who had initiated the organization would like my assistance with.
Great. Great. And our next guest was, we've kind of pre-planned, she'll talk to us a little bit about the profiles and some of the other projects that Ordained Women has done. But April Bennett, welcome to the podcast. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm April Young Bennett, and I'm a public health professional, and I'm a mom, and I live in Salt Lake City. And I blog for The Exponent, too, which is a lot of fun. And I have also been with the Ordained Women movement ever since the beginning. I was also one of the first profiles.
So same thing. So, let's just jump right in. So, Daniel, would you tell us quickly You mentioned Kate Kelly. It was her and who else that got things rolling, and when, what time period was this and all that stuff?
So the primary organizing for ordained women specifically took place this past winter, late winter and early spring. Kate Kelly, Lori Winder Stromberg, Hannah Wheelwright, several other women got in touch with each other and discussed how they'd like to be able to move forward with some of the work that's been done by many different Mormon feminists over the last 30 years at least in writing and thinking about ordination for LDS women and thinking about, you know, ways in which that could be furthered beyond sort of the circles where these kinds of writings and thinking sort of circulate, and sort of how to reach out to a broader audience and to reach out to church leadership about their desire to be ordained and the desire that many other Mormon women share as well.
Okay, so, and they called it ordained women, and when you call it ordained women, you're basically, that's the end result or the end goal, versus are there other groups that are basically still operating that are saying, you know, full participation, possibly ordination, but some other way is great. Why do you sense that they had a plan in saying it's ordination, that's the only way that we have equality? Do you get what I'm sort of going for there?
I think so, yeah. So there are definitely other organizations. All Are Alike Unto God is a petition and letter that outlines some of the ways in which women can be made more full participants in the church. WAVE is an ongoing existent organization that has resources and actions that are designed to incorporate women more fully into the LDS church experience and to draw the attention of priesthood leaders to women's voices and the ways that women could be brought into greater equality in their wards. There's also several other sort of smaller, but pretty well publicized actions that have taken place in the last year, such as the Wear Pants to Church Day and Let Women Pray, that, you know, had a particular angle to say, you know, here's a small way perhaps that we could be more inclusive of women. But I think that definitely the idea behind ordained women is that women's ordination actually encompasses all of the list of all the ways that, you know, women could be better included in their wards, be included as more authoritative voices, more represented voices in leadership positions, and with, you know, existing leadership structures. To say that all of those suggestions, from the very small idea to, you know, make nursing rooms in chapels more comfortable and to ensure that there are changing tables in the bathrooms for both men and women, on up to questioning, you know, why there aren't women who are able to sit in councils with stake in area authorities and in those councils provide authoritative and active leadership roles. And so, you know, from the big to the small, the idea is that ordaining women is how you can best eventually get to all of those issues.
Okay. And so these other movements, these other groups that aren't saying right off the bat, ordain, 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 friends, colleagues, tensions, any going on?
Oh, absolutely, friends and colleagues. I think that this is a very big conversation with a lot of very well thought out opinions from people on all sides of the issue. And so definitely for us, anyone who sees that women could be more fully included in the way, in the culture and of Mormonism and in just our general sort of social and ecclesiastical structures, is absolutely an ally and someone that who we would, you know, support, and because we agree with that. There are women who are part of Ordained Women who are also work with WAVE or who work with Feminist Mormon Housewives or who work with, I worked on Let Women Pray. And so there's a lot of cross-pollination happening, and not everyone in all of those organizations, of course, is on the same page as those of us who've chosen to participate in Ordained Women. But absolutely from our side, there's a great deal of respect for the work that everyone is doing on the issue of gender equality in the church.
Great. Thank you. April, I want to turn to you in a second for kind of Ordained Women and sort of the different projects they've doing. Christine, I want to call you in, though, at this time. Any observations about kind of how Danielle has situated all this, or what questions do you have?
No, I mean, that, you know, that fits with the way I've understood it. Danielle, you sort of elided or ignored Dan's question about whether there are tensions with some of these other groups. And my sense is that there are some, at least that many women who would call themselves Mormon feminists are not thrilled about Ordained Women. And I wonder about your perspective on those difficulties.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I didn't
you don't
mean
have to go there right now, Dan. We can.
Yeah, I was thinking we will definitely get into at least some of those kinds of discussions later. But at this point, is it enough to say that there are tensions?
Yeah, I can just speak to it really briefly. I didn't really mean to sort of elide that aspect of your question. Although Christine's absolutely right that I didn't address it. So there are certainly women who call themselves Mormon feminists, who identify as Mormon feminists, and who strongly disagree with either Ordained Women as a fundamental idea or with particular actions that Ordained Women has or is planning to take. And so I think, though, at least from the conversations that I've had with women in Ordained Women, that while we are certainly aware that there's a great deal of disagreement out there, I do want to emphasize that it's disagreement with respect for, you know, right for everyone here to have their well-considered opinions.
Awesome.
Yeah, actually, I think that's maybe one of the best things about the discussion that's happening now, is that there are actually enough Mormon feminists for the movement to be a little bit fractured. I mean, that's not necessarily the most effective way to get things done, but I do think that that's part of the process, that Mormon women have to learn to be comfortable with disagreement, because, you know, the kinds of discussions we have in Relief Society where, you know, you can't disagree without everyone completely freaking out are part of the problem, frankly. You know, the fact that women are socialized to never ever be, you know, what's called contentious is part of the problem. And so I'm actually sort of heartened by seeing Mormon feminists getting a little contentious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Good stuff. April, so you posted an early profile and you've been with them since then. Can you give us sort of a timeline of the various projects? Tell us, first of all, about those profiles, and then take us on up to the other pieces of you know, I know you've got a great slideshow about the 10 major objections, and take us up through all that, and then we'll stop short of it, but then we'll talk after that on the proposed action at the priesthood meeting. So,
sure. Okay, so we've had three major projects so far, and the first one was the profiles, and that is a website that is kind of like a social networking site in that people have profiles, and it shows a big, enormous picture of your face, and underneath that it has, in your own words, you talking about why you support women's ordination. And this project has been much more successful than we expected. I mean, I think we kind of imagined that this would kind of be this, you know, it would be our website. but it's become so much more than that. I got a lot of media attention right from the beginning. And I think that's because it kind of forces us to come out of our shells and do things that we're not really used to, because we're used to not saying out loud, I want the priesthood. And this website, we actually have a big picture of our face. We have our name, and we are actually saying why we want the priesthood. And since there are so many wonderful, wonderful reasons why women should be ordained, there all these different reasons that people post are pretty unique. And you can go through for hours and look and see why different people feel strongly about this issue.
Okay, and so what's the website? And these are short videos or just audio?
Some are videos and some are just written out. So we have them in text or video format.
Okay, and what's the site?
The website is ordainwomen.org.
Okay, so this is the main website. Because when you said we thought for a while this would be our website, do you have another website that isn't these profiles?
No, no, we just thought of it like as a website, like, you know, like other organizations, their website just kind of houses their information. And it's not, we didn't think of it as like a big part of the movement at first, before we realized how much media attention it would get as soon as we posted it, which was actually an interesting surprise for me, because I was one of the first 19 people to post a profile, and there was a lot of media attention. And so my bishop saw me on the news. So that was interesting. But
is that a story to tell us? Has it been a positive interaction?
It turned out to be a good conversation. Okay. So that was good. It's a way to force us to come out of our shells and have these good conversations.
Awesome. Now, just quick question. Are people allowed to still continue to add their own profile?
Are they allowed? We beg them to. Yes.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if it was closed off at a certain point.
Please send us profiles. We've now got well over 100. I don't know exactly what the number is now, but they're growing every day. Since we've been doing our current project, we've been getting a lot more attention, and people have been sending us profiles. We've been putting up new ones pretty much daily. So, yeah, we definitely welcome profiles.
Great. Project number one, profiles. What else?
Okay, so our next project was our launch event, which took place during April General Conference. And so while the men were at priesthood session, we had our launch event, which happened simultaneously with priesthood session. And at that event, we pretty much talked about the rationale behind ordaining women. And so we talked about the history of the movement. We talked about the good reasons why women should be ordained. We also talked about the theological evidence for ordination. For example, we talked about the biblical evidence for women who were ordained during biblical times. And we talked about the use of spiritual gifts among early Latter-day Saints that have since kind of been taken away from the permissions of what women are allowed to do today.
Right.
We also had sort of a testimony meeting where people could actually just stand up and off the top of their heads talk about why they felt strongly about ordination. And we were a little bit nervous about doing this part because we were afraid there would be hecklers, and we had a lot of discussion about how to handle hecklers and what if people start throwing spitwads, what are we going to do, you know? And that did not happen at all. It turned into just like a really spiritual testimony meeting. Everyone who stood up to speak was basically talking about how they've been waiting for their whole life to have an opportunity to articulate how strongly they felt about the ordination of women. And it really was a beautiful meeting.
Okay. Number two, meeting.
All right. So our next event was in August, and there we had a national fast where we designated a day when we were all going to fast for equality. And this we made a little bit broader than our previous movements because we weren't just talking about our own LDS church. We did this in coordination with other churches, such as the Catholics, that also lack women's ordination in their churches. And so we were fasting for people in all of their own communities of faith to have this opportunity. And so we did that. We also, in conjunction with that day of fasting, we also had some prayer services to culminate those days. We had one in Washington, D.C., and also one in Salt Lake City. And we had people from different denominations speak either about why it would be important to them to have women's ordination within their denomination. We also had heard from some other religions that are a little bit further along than we are on this, and heard about how they came to have this in their own congregations and what they had to do to get to the point where they had equality within their churches. And so that's really important for us to learn so that we can learn from these other faiths how they made that happen.
Now, are any of these events filmed or available on the website, or descriptions of them at least?
Yes. Yes, the Washington, D.C. event was filmed, and so you can access that from our website and watch the whole thing. And we have a very detailed description of both that's written out.
Nice. Wonderful. So those are the three main things. Now, when did this video slideshow thing happen, and is that considered a fourth action by you guys? Or is that more independent?
No, actually, that one was done by Feminist Mormon Housewives.
Oh, hello. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we actually have a lot of people who overlap, who are in both Ordained Women and Feminist Mormon Housewives, or Ordained Women and Exponent. And so you'll see a lot of postings that come from people who are Ordained Women representatives, but they are also members of these other communities.
Okay, but would anybody then just describe that? I thought it was terrific. Somebody describe what that little slideshow I'm talking about is, and if anybody knows a link to it or something that we can share.
I'd be happy to describe the video. It's, as Dan mentioned, it covers the 10 most common arguments against women's ordination in the Mormon Church. Basically, those of us who support women's ordination hear a lot of objections from a lot of different corners of the Mormon universe. And after a while, after you hear enough of them, they start to repeat. And these were 10 that we found that we were hearing most often. And so the video goes through them. Do you want me to name the 10? I don't need to go through them.
Probably not. They'll come up probably in our conversation later. And when we say video here, we're talking a slideshow, kind of like, here's a slide that poses the objection, and then there's several slides that answer it, or at least...
Right. Some animation and cheerful music. Entertain and educate you for 9 minutes and some 30 seconds, something like that.
Great.
And so that video you can find on feministmormonhousewives.org. It's also, from what I hear, being pinned like crazy on Pinterest.
Oh.
So if you are a pinner, you could also easily access it there and pin it yourself if you like.
Sweet. Thank you. That's great. And I'll end up linking to it, I'm sure, in the blog portion of the podcast here. So thank you, Danielle. Now, is there any other tools like that you guys are excited about? I definitely want to go back to Ordained Women, and we'll definitely start our conversation very soon on the priesthood meeting plans. But anything else that you guys are noticing in the Mormon universe that seems like a neat tool?
I've definitely been impressed by the large number of women and men writing so many different blogs in support of this movement. I think that there have been a lot of different and creative ways that people have addressed the issues. There's also a great deal out there, either, in direct opposition or problematizing and critiquing what's happening. And so really I found that in the last, few weeks, essentially any Mormon blog in the blogosphere that you could think of has dealt with this in some way or the other.
Okay.
If you're interested in reading specifically more supportive think-throughs of this issue, I think that Feminist Mormon Housewives and Exponent blog have both been doing a lot and doing it very well. I'd also like to just point people to the frequently asked questions portion of the Ordained Women website. Is very thoughtfully, carefully done and deals with this answering a large number of questions that have commonly come up for Mormon feminists as they've been thinking about this issue over, like I said, decades now. And so that's a good place to find sort of some succinct answers to a lot of common questions in a very, articulate and easy to access and explore format.
And just a shout out to both Wheat and Tares and Rational Faiths have had a couple of great posts on this too. So
yes, absolutely. There's too many to.
Yeah,
I feel bad mentioning any, but yes, they have been awesome as well.
Well, great. If nobody has any more, well, first of all, if you do, jump in. Otherwise, April, Take it away. What on earth are you guys planning? Tell me really what it is that you hope and all the dreams and expectations, etc. for October 5th.
All right. So hopefully many, many, many of us are going to be attending priesthood session this upcoming October. We don't know yet whether we're going to be admitted, but we are seeking tickets. We've requested them from church headquarters. We also have members of our group that have requested them from local leaders. So far, we have yet to actually receive any tickets, but we're hoping. And if we don't receive them, we're going to go stand in the standby line and go into priesthood session. And the main purpose of us doing this is to demonstrate that we consider ourselves to be potential priesthood holders. And we're demonstrating that we're willing to perform priesthood duties, such as attending priesthood session. And we're hoping that when we go to priesthood session, that our leaders will notice us there and they will think about our untapped potential and they will prayerfully consider the ordination of women.
Okay. And so people who, so I hear that you guys are turning down tickets from just non-official sources, right? There's lots of men who are actually offering you tickets, but you want to get them from the hierarchy in some sort.
We have some rules that we're abiding by, and one of those is that we don't use deceitful tactics to get into a holy meeting. Okay. And so if a man gets tickets and doesn't disclose that he's going to be sharing them with women and then gives them to us, that's a little bit sneaky, and we're not doing anything sneaky.
Nice.
So we're not going to get them that way.
Okay. Now, let's say you do get some from the hierarchy. How will the ushers know that it came from them versus you, you know, versus these other ways? And will do you fully anticipate that they would all be trained to admit you?
We have no idea. We really don't know whether they're going to admit us or not. We hope so, but we don't know.
Okay. So with tickets, it's likely that they won't admit you through the stand in line, or is that your what do you guys think of the odds are?
We don't know yet. Like I said, through local leaders, we haven't had a lot of luck, but we did send a letter to church headquarters on Monday. And so that we're waiting now to find out what the response to that will be. And we requested tickets directly from church headquarters. So we're hoping that works.
Okay. And either way, you still are gathering ahead of time. And what's the plan for the events that lead up to and that follow priesthood session?
So we're going to meet at 4 o'clock p.m. at City Creek Park, which is near Temple Square. And we're going to gather, have a prayer, sing, and then we'll just walk over to the conference center together. And if we have tickets, we'll go straight into that line. If we don't have tickets, we'll go to the standby line.
And this will be women and men that support them?
Right. There are women and men who will be participating. Right now we have about 116 last time I checked who have committed to go. And we have 60-something maybes right now.
Terrific. And then ideally you get into priesthood meeting, you finish priesthood meeting, and then you guys have an 8 o'clock event scheduled.
So after that, we'll go back to the park and just talk about what happened. And well, we hope it'll be at about 8 o'clock. Obviously, if they don't let us in at all, we'll return to the park a lot earlier.
I was just going to say, so yeah, okay. So if it's a no at the door, then you guys will do it. And when you say we'll talk about what happened, you'll talk to who and, in you know, who do you expect? Will there be a lot of coverage that you would expect and things like that?
We do anticipate media coverage. But of course, we'll also be talking with each other about our experience. And we do intend to, if we're turned away, then we will go back and have a group prayer in praying for equality and for us to have that improvement in our church.
So this won't really be a press conference or a press event. They will be there probably to report on it, but you're not going to make this a press conference.
No, I wouldn't think it would be a formal press conference, but we would be willing to talk to whatever press are there.
Okay, good. Anybody else, Danielle or Christine, what else have you heard that we may have left out here and at least the basic plan for that day?
I'd just like to add that I think the hope and main purpose of the meeting following conference is that we'd be able to share our testimonies of the experience and the ways that we were uplifted by listening to conference and listening to our leaders. I think also, though, if, you know, we are turned away, then it'd also be an opportunity to, again, you know, share our testimonies with one another and to sort of do some community hope building around this issue and around sort of general issues of inequality, gender inequality in the church. So it's definitely, I think, would be really misleading to call it a press conference, because I think, you know, any of the public sort of group addresses being made are the plan is that they'll be targeted at those of us who are attending in a discussion of our experiences versus sort of targeted to media,
right,
the way that a press conference would, you know, sort of be cueing the language, obviously, to a reporter, whereas our plan is for this to be a community building and spiritually uplifting activity.
Thank you. April, I do have some questions now. When did the idea for this begin to percolate among the leaders of ordained women? Has this been a unanimous voice? We'd just love any peek behind the curtains of the process that led to you guys announcing it and saying, we are actually going to do this.
This was one of the ideas that has been around pretty much the whole time. It was one of the first ideas that came up, and it was actually something that we considered doing in April. And at that time, we decided it would be better to have an alternate event at the same time as priesthood session instead of to try to attend priesthood session. So it is something that we've been thinking about for a while.
And has there been debates over it, or is everyone just thinks? Eventually, I want to kind of get into strategic thinking, and you know, if their time is for more education versus direct action at this scale, this public, etc. And so that's where I'm headed. But tell me, this is a group that's been united the whole way?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think there's been a lot of debate about this action. Some people were concerned that we might disrupt the event for male priesthood holders and might detract from their experience, and nobody wants to detract from someone else's spiritual experience. That's very important to us, but we did agree on some guidelines that we think will prevent any disruption from happening, because we've been very specific to anyone who participates in this event that we don't want them to carry signs or banners. We want them to dress in their Sunday best. We don't want any anti-church diatribes, anything like that. We've also been very specific about how we will behave when we arrive. If we are admitted, we are going to reverently attend the session. We're not going to try to attract attention to ourselves in any way. If we are not admitted, we're going to peacefully leave. We're certainly not going to do a sit-in or try to get in if they don't let us in. We'll just peacefully leave.
Okay, and so you guys are pretty confident that whoever does walk over there, as well as whoever speaks publicly in the park afterwards, are pretty disciplined in those ways?
We are. I think that we've been very clear about our guidelines for this event, and we are also putting together some training information for all the participants, and we're having a training event the night before where we're going to clarify these important strategies and why it's so important to make sure that we don't disrupt anyone's worship experience.
Terrific. Well, seems like you guys have a good plan in place. So what do you expect? Anybody, all three of you, what do you expect will happen?
Well, my personal expectation, because there, all of us, I think, have slightly differing guesses as to how exactly this will go. But my expectation is that we probably won't be admitted. And I think whether, you know, there are any of us who are able to get tickets ahead of time or stand in the standby line, I don't really think it will make much of a difference. And I think we probably won't be admitted. And so I hope that's not the case. But that's personally, if I were going to bet, I mean, I don't because I'm Mormon, but
I love it.
That would be my bet. But April, I don't remember what you've said. Kind of,
I haven't hedged a bet on this one. I really don't know how they'll react to us. But I think I'm leaning more towards, I think they'll let us in, because one of the things that I've noticed as we've had discussions with people around this is that many people aren't even aware that women aren't allowed at priesthood session. They just assume that women don't go because they don't want to. And I think everyone's pretty comfortable with that, but they would be less comfortable with the idea of us demonstrating that we're really not allowed in. I don't think anyone would like that. I think they would rather just let us in. But that's my guess.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the idea of thinking of yourselves as potential priesthood holders. I did like a term that I picked up in your lit or somewhere of prospective elders, and how there is a long history, certainly, of the church welcoming prospective elders into conference, prospective priesthood holders. And so I like that you're claiming that. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's has been particularly attractive to me about attending, making the effort to do this. I'm flying in from Boston to be there and to attend conference and hopefully priesthood session. And part of what's attractive about it to me is that this is women being unable to attend priesthood session is one of those gender traditions in the church that doesn't have a great founding in actual doctrine, because women who are anointed in the temple are, you know, anointed to one day fill the role of priestess. And so, you know, in some sense, whether it be in this life or the next, women have a role to play within the priesthood. And so why not allow women to attend a meeting that is for the general membership of the church? It takes place during, you know, conference session. It's one of our general meetings. Right. And so, and all of these talks, right, are available to anyone who'd like to read them after the fact. And so for those women, myself included, who feel that having the opportunity to attend this session would be uplifting and would be a chance to, you know, listen to our leaders and to have that experience that we get to have, you know, every 6 months, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. Why not?
Mm-hmm. One thing that I've noticed that I think is kind of funny is that the way lots of men have reacted to this plan is to say, well, do you want me to go to a Relief Society meeting? How would you like to have men at Relief Society meeting? Which is kind of a funny, ironic statement when one considers that actually men attend, speak at, and preside over every General Relief Society meeting.
Right.
So we definitely treat General Relief Society meeting in a much different way than we do the priesthood session. It's not like we have a men's meeting and a women's meeting.
Yes, very good. Christine, any thoughts on the odds of what will happen?
Yeah, I actually think that it would be smart from a purely cynical PR perspective for them to be allowed in. If I were running things, I would rather have them inside listening than outside talking to reporters. So, you know, I maybe purely pragmatic reasons will get them admitted, which would be great.
Interesting. It's a thought I've had as well. So thank you for that. Not only thank you because you agree with the thought I already had, but no.
That's all right. No. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you.
Yes. All right. Appreciate that. Hey, I do have one other thought before we kind of just start mixing it up just with some of the, you know, what about this? What about that? Now, you guys, let's say that it doesn't happen. Let's say you don't get in this time. Are you guys already talking that this will be something that you'll just do every conference for who knows how long? Is this just going to be a regular plan? Or, you know, with a lot of movements, it's like, oh, there's a certain window of when there's strong energy, or, you know, if change doesn't come by this, I'm going to call this a lost cause. Are you guys already talking about the long term on this?
We have talked about it. We haven't come to a decision. Our long term goal, of course, is the ordination of women. and for women to have full equality within our church. And so whether or not we get into priesthood session this time really isn't as important as the long-term goal of demonstrating that we consider ourselves to be prospective priesthood holders and to demonstrate that we feel so strongly about the priesthood and why women should have it that we're willing to come at great distances. We have people coming from, like Danielle mentioned, she's coming from Boston. We have people coming from other countries even to this event to demonstrate how much they care about having the priesthood. And so that's what our real goal is. It's not so much about whether or not they let us into priesthood session.
Very interesting. Very good. Well, I'm feeling good about you guys. I think that's a terrific for as in terms of how the different many ways that something like this could go. I'm really thrilled with how careful and you seem to be emphasizing all the best things. So I'm thrilled. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing about that. And I'm just glad for you guys. Are you okay to mix it up a little bit now? Can we talk about the blowback that you're getting, the sense from some people that this maybe is not the most strategic move in terms of, you know, it might be too early, there's not been enough education of the persuadable middle or whoever you might call those within the church who might come your way eventually. They might be polarized or put off by this, especially perhaps if things go wrong in the press or something afterwards with some of the more strident voices, that in some ways you're setting yourselves up for a harder road ahead than if you continued down the path of education and perhaps working on some of the more intermediate steps that, you know, are certainly out there, like women participating in basically taking over the worthiness interviews with, you know, like a young women leader doing the worthiness interviews with the young women under her care, Relief Society presidents, you know, or at least presence of men and women if there is sort of a, you know, the private interview type stuff. So I know that's one thing that people have talked about. I know that the ward councils, the state councils, the mission councils are all just now getting started. You know, there's people who say, why don't we just let that happen? Why don't we let men sort of discover on their own through this great participation of women? Wow, there are things in this world that I'm just not seeing. And thank you for these voices and having them get more and more comfortable with women, you know, really speaking up in those types of things. And then, of course, there's always been, at least for the last quite a while, an emphasis on, you know, disclaiming healing again as a spiritual gift. It's not even a priesthood gift. You know, right there in all the scriptures, it's a gift of the Spirit rather than a priesthood thing. And so women, you know, standing up, doing that, reclaiming that, sharing their stories about it, and slowly normalizing that. So those are the kinds of things that seem like have been the intermediate steps that I think a lot of people have thought was the way to go. And so any amplification on those? Are you guys hearing those comments and just saying, I want all those things to happen too, but we just feel like this is our calling as ordained women to do what we're doing?
We are definitely hearing all of those objections or critiques or questions. You covered a lot of them, and none of them are something that I haven't heard before, and I'm sure that's true for April as well and for the rest of us who've been working on this. I think that what you said at the end is the particularly salient point for many of us, is that this has felt like our particular area for us to participate in at this time, based on the ways that we all have individually reasoned it out in our minds and studied it and gone to our Heavenly Parents in prayer. And this is where we've all felt compelled to land. All of the intermediary steps that you mentioned are things that I feel like I can pretty confidently say that every single one of us would happily support, would happily see happen. But like I mentioned at the sort of beginning of the program, we see ordained women as being an umbrella that takes in all of those options, but simultaneously doesn't stop work on those individual points of progress from going forward. So okay. Ordaining women has the potential to encompass all of those problems. Certainly, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I or anyone else believes that ordaining women would solve all of the equality issues in the church in one fell swoop. That would be naive and would ignore the fact that gender inequality runs deep in our secular as well as religious communities, and it's something that we're all just working on as a human family. So, you know, that's going to be a really long journey. But I think what we see is that all of those things that you mentioned could be gotten to a lot more quickly without even, you know, with a lot more intuitiveness if we had a more diverse leadership structure. And ordaining women is part of accomplishing that.
One thing that she said that kind of resonates with me is when I think about all of these baby step proposals, which I do work on and which I have been working on tirelessly for years, is that with this movement, instead of saying, I want you to discriminate against me slightly less, I'm saying, I respect myself and other women so much, I want to be equal.
Right.
And another thing that we've been thinking about, we've been quoting Martin Luther King a lot around ordained women, because he said, justice too long delayed is justice denied. And although ordained women itself as a group has only been working for about a year, the people who are in ordained women have been working on this for much, much longer. And right. So this has been decades in the making. Another wonderful, great person that we like to quote at ordained women is Lori Winder. And the great Lori Winder says, I am the answer to the question, isn't this precipitous? Because she has been advocating for women's ordination for decades, literally.
Now, one thought that has occurred to me is, like, you know, if you're ever starting a business or, you know, kind of a business plan or something, you almost have to imagine the biggest possibility for you right from the start. Otherwise, your business will probably never grow that big. So if you don't imagine yourself ever being global, you probably won't if you always just say, I'm just a mom and pop store, or I'm just a this, or I'm just a that. And so I do kind of like this idea of ordained women just saying right out there, this is the goal. You know, we don't think that there can be any true equality without this ordinational equality and things like that. So I do like that. But is there a sense that you guys also, as you look in movements, you see the radical fringe that kind of, you know, they're the ones way out there, and you hope to basically shift the middle a little bit your way because they'll say, well, anything short of those radical women is a good step, and there's... I'm not saying this right, but I think everyone knows what I'm basically saying. There's, you know, the true radicals, we need those voices, but yet it's probably that more moderate group that will actually get the face-to-face time with the brethren, and, you know, the changes will start to happen. Does that make sense? Do you guys have a sense that you're playing that role? And how much do you hate that?
I actually don't know any women who are advocating for either baby step proposals or for big things who are getting any FaceTime with the brethren. So if any of us do, I'd be thrilled, but I haven't heard of it happening.
Right. But you may be providing the impetus for, like, okay, this is coming on. We're getting all this press. It's starting to become part of the big conversation here. But those guys, man, you know, direct action, trying to get in a priesthood meeting, you know, even if they're being calm and stuff, that still is a spectacle. Let's find the women who, you know, let's look harder at WAVE, or those who are advocating more for, let's concentrate first on worthiness interviews or something.
Our goal isn't to be the radical fringe. I don't know that anyone on the radical fringes necessarily has that as their goal. But it's possible, you know, that some people set out with that.
I've heard a couple people honor that, but that's not with
no,
that where you guys are.
And from my perspective, I think, you know, for the radical position to take on gender issues in the church, and that many men and women have taken is to leave. And so, to me, it doesn't strike me as the most radical position to say, we're here, we're staying here, and we're asking within the existing leadership structure for dialogue, and ultimately our hope, you know, is action on an issue that is near and dear to our hearts. So that personally doesn't strike me as being particularly radical. But I do know that there are people who see it that way. And as far as I'm concerned, if it does open them up to hearing from people or from, you know, particular organizations or movements who are offering more gradual steps, then that's great. Because as I've said, you know, those are steps that we'd love to see taken as well. We're absolutely not opposed to forward movement. It's just that, as you pointed out, we're stating the end goal. And for me, one of the reasons that I felt particularly compelled to be upfront about where I see, you know, the goal line being, at least, you know, in some degree, because that, I mean, priesthood is big and church is big, and we could have a much more radical kind of rethinking of how we, you know, practice our Mormonism than just ordaining women. But in terms of gender equality, you know, having equal shared work and all of the various forms of church service, that for me is a goal line in that effort. And part of why I felt compelled to be very upfront about my feelings on that is because I found that it doesn't really mean that the pushback that I get is any stronger than when I own wanting a smaller step. So for example, in helping to, you know, advertise and participate in Wear Pants to Church Sunday, you know, there were some dramatically virulent opinions about that activity. Or when I've mentioned, you know, I remember in college mentioning to my male peers that I thought that men and women should, as spouses, should consider an equal partnership what, you know, the structure of, you know, which spouse works, not necessarily delineated on gendered lines and not necessarily, you know, based exclusively on sort of this dichotomy that we've set up of, you know, stay-at-home mother, work out of the home dad. Our world is much more flexible now for a great many of us. And I, you know, in just stating that I think that this discussion should be handled couple by couple, based on their own individual needs. Like, I had young men I considered friends calling me to repentance. So for me, you know, saying that I want the priesthood gets about the equivalent kinds of responses as saying those smaller things. And so why not be upfront and honest about, you know, where I see our real needs, our ultimate need to be.
Yeah, we have a lot of cultural taboos that really seem to silence women. And those of us who have been advocating for women to have anything different than the status quo find that, no matter how small it is, no matter how big it is. And so in a way, we are purposefully breaking those taboos. And we're trying to make it possible to have a dialogue about these issues. And I think it's working, because since Ordained Women launched, all of a sudden we can talk to each other about whether women should have the priesthood. I mean, not everyone agrees with us, but I can recall a time in my life when the first time someone asked me, do you want the priesthood? The way they said it, it sounded just like they were saying, do you want to bomb an orphanage? And I mean, it wasn't like there was even the possibility of having real dialogue about it. And now there is.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, for a long time, it was just reflexive to say, I'm not saying women should have the priesthood, but, you know, it was the Mormon equivalent of I'm not a feminist, but, you know, you had to say, oh, I'm not, you know, you had to reassure people. And it worked the other way too, and still does, that as soon as you say, you know, I think more women should be in ward council or, you know, any small change, the instantaneous, I mean, on a blog, it's within 5 comments, someone will say, you are not going to be happy until women have the priesthood. I mean, people, that's what people are arguing about anyway, you know, whether they're willing to say it or not, that's what everybody is thinking about. And, so I agree that there's some value in just saying it, just putting it really on the table.
Awesome. Christine, I'm definitely going to throw back to you here in a minute for some more things, so thank you for that. But April, there was something, I'm almost positive it was April that said this. I apologize if not. But you said something like, we're willing to share all the work or to do all the work and things like that. And what I was just reminded of is, I love that. But the thing that has just been so big in my heart is I would like to see everybody not only share the work, but to have, if they have a particular gift, to allow it to be fully flourish. And so, for instance, there are just amazing women with leadership gifts, and to not allow them to truly lead, it hurts my heart. Or the same thing, they have great ministerial or pastoral gifts, and to not have their voices and their wisdom, you know, be able to be seen and felt equally, it bothers me. I don't know if you guys know, I just finished editing I edited a book that just barely came out. It's called The Challenge of Honesty, Essays for Latter-day Saints by Frances Lee Menlove. And she was one of the five original founders of Dialogue, the journal. She was back at Stanford doing a postdoc at the time that thing got going. But we collected her essays and writings through the years, and we actually wrote a couple of new ones, and one of them is on women's ordination, so maybe that we'll bring up that later. But I just love what she said towards the end of the preface to her book. She basically says, So what happened with her is she, you know, has remained Mormon, but she also went and felt the call to go to seminary when she was in her 60s, and she's now in her early 70s, and she gets ordained, and she's now a minister in another tradition. She does prison ministry. She volunteers with the Red Cross. She works with this group called Peace Village and things like this. But here she says, my current path involves self-contradiction, then so be it. I find myself in my mid-70s in a situation of double belonging. If I'm granted more years, I may change my mind again, but I am now where I belong, still respecting and loving my roots, but deeply grateful to other faith traditions that have nourished my questing spirit and given me opportunities for service not likely for a single, divorced, aging female in a contemporary Mormon ward. And just right there, that is just like right in my heart saying, we are so impoverished because there isn't this place or this pathway for this amazingly huge souled person, you know, to have all of her gifts flourish within our church, that, you know, she had to honor the call that she got to go somewhere else.
That's really sad.
That's just, yeah. So I love your shared work thing, but I just wanted to add in that piece of, you know, whatever your gift is, it gets a chance to be given.
Yeah, I'm so glad that she found a way in which to share her talents. I think, you know, our leaders are not blind to this problem. Elder Holland, when speaking at Harvard not long ago, said that the church really needs to do more for its women. And for us, this is the way that we see it needs to be done. But, you know, speaking again to those smaller steps that, you know, we see as being incorporated under this whole idea of ordaining women, there's a lot that can be done. And so one of the things that we hear really often is that, oh, men and women are equal. Men and women in the church, like, women are satisfied. But, you know, our leaders know that there are women who don't feel that way. And we hear from women who don't feel that way, and a huge part of it is feeling that lack of opportunity to exercise their gifts and their talents. And so providing more scope for that would be so wonderful for all of us. I mean, I'm just like imagining that woman whose essays I absolutely want to read now, speaking in my ward and working, you know, as in a position of a bishop, as a minister and a counselor. That sounds like such an incredible opportunity to me to be able to have her to learn from. And there are so many women like that with all kinds of talents, and we aren't tapping that potential.
But just Danielle, her name's Frances Lee Menlove, and the book is The Challenge of Honesty. I'll link to it. We're about to launch a little announcement that the book's now out and available and stuff, so you'll get to hear about that. Christine actually did a blurb for us, and one of the fun things about Christine is she and Frances were in the same ward back in Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Yeah, when I was a little girl. My dad was...
That's so neat.
Yeah, she was there for my Woman Without a Man is Like a Fish Without a Bicycle sacrament meeting talk.
So cool. Oh. So cool. And,
if only she tape recorded it. If only someone had tape recorded it.
Yeah.
Do you have it, your notes on that, Christine? Because that is always something I've always wanted to read.
Yeah, I think my 3x5 cards might be somewhere. I mean, I was 9 years old, so who knows?
Awesome.
All the more adorable that you used note cards. You knew what you
had. I remember writing on my note card, pause for laughter.
Love it.
And there wasn't a lot of laughter. It was more stuck silence. But
Frances hopefully smiling at you. Yeah. Awesome. Now, Christine, I want to engage you now. I've thrown out lots of different things, you know, everywhere from these different possible shorter steps. And I mentioned earlier, you know, the term strategic. Is this a strategic move to do this at conference and whatnot? What are you hearing out there? What are your own thoughts, if you're willing to share them? What would you do to sort of help drive this conversation into just a little bit better fleshing out of that type of pushback?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly difficult to figure out what is an effective strategy for promoting or even asking for change in the church. A lot of the usual things that you would do with a big bureaucracy or a nation state or a corporation don't really apply. The church doesn't work that way. So, for instance, you guys were saying that you're not aware of the general authorities meeting with any women. And the thing is, none of us would be aware. That would be the whole point, is that they would meet with them quietly and they would not want anyone to know. And, you know, it would probably not be someone who is the head of a movement. It would be someone who was a relative or a friend. You know, I mean, the church, as big as it has gotten, is still pretty small, really. I mean, the informal, familial neighborhood networks of power are really still how a lot of things get done in the church. And so so it's just really tricky to have any idea what is strategically smart. And I certainly don't. I'm skittish about ordained women's strategies, some of them. But I'm really not sure if that's because I have better insight into the workings of, you know, of church politics, or if it's because I'm just timid temperamentally. You know, I really don't know. I think one thing that's much harder about this than some other changes, the obvious parallel that people draw is with Blacks receiving the priesthood. And this is much, much, much harder than that, because while there was some sort of theological speculation around why Black men didn't hold the priesthood, there's tons and tons and tons more. I mean, the church has taken gender roles and gender as its absolute boundary maintenance issue with, you know, Western society for the last several decades. And so there's so much more invested in women not having the priesthood than there was invested in Black men not having the priesthood. And there's no alternative theology that presents itself yet. Patriarchy is, even though it basically doesn't operate anymore at the level of the home, we're still committed to it as a rhetorical principle and as the way that the church runs. And it's just it is a really big, thick brick wall to bang one's head against.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things Danielle mentioned that I wanted to just go back to a little bit was, you know, when we say women aren't equal in the church or the church is sexist in its practices, people immediately go to the level of the individual. They say, well, I'm not sexist. You know, I listen to women. I respect my wife. I'm personally nice to women, so there must not be a problem because I'm a Mormon man and I'm nice to women, so therefore the church can't be sexist. And we don't look at structural inequities or structural evils even in society. I mean, we do this, we think of a sort of neutral example. We talk, for instance, we give people personal advice about getting out of debt, and we say nothing about the huge increase in inequality in American capitalism over the last, you know, three decades that makes it so hard for people to get out of debt. We see most moral issues as problems of individual choice. And so the fact that we see sexism at the level of individuals and we speak out against it in marriages and we tell bishops that they should listen to women, and we think that's the real problem. You know, the only problem is that some people are sexist in the way that they implement church policy. And we're just blind to the structural inequity or unable to confront the possibility of changing it. And I see that in the reaction to ordained women. Well, I see it in a couple of ways, partly from other women who say, you know, I wouldn't want the priesthood. How dare you, you know, claim to speak for me? I am perfectly happy with the way things are. I feel equal. That's my favorite. I feel equal, because equal is a feeling, right?
a very measurable one, unusually measurable for a feeling.
No sense. The word equal has content. And anyway, but we see it. And even women who are trying to be sympathetic will say, oh, I'm sorry that you have such a hard time in the church, or that you don't feel valued. And it's not that. It's not that I don't feel valued. I feel, you know, I'm well treated in the structure. People are nice to me. You know, I get a chance to speak in church, and I feel like if I had a problem, I could talk to my bishop, and, you know, I feel fine. But that's not the point. The point is that there's this gross structural injustice, and we need to address it. And the other sort of huge structural issue that I think ordained women doesn't really address is that over the course of the 20th century, priesthood became synonymous with administration. And so we now have this very tangled situation where priesthood power is both the power to perform ordinances and just it's political power in the church, or organizational power. And we haven't disentangled those in any really intelligent or methodical ways. And so I worry that it would be perfectly possible to ordain women and still not address any of the structural issues, that you could have individual women who were, you know, ordained and maybe in elders quorum meeting, or maybe in their own women's quorums of priesthood. I mean, I think that's the most likely thing, is that if we tried to ordain women today, what would happen is that we'd have separate quorums for women, and the structural issues would not get addressed. And, you know, it might make it easier to address them if we took that step, but it might not. And I could easily see a backlash that says, you know, we gave you what you wanted, now quit it. So those two things, sort of disentangling the structural problem from the problem of individual behavior and individual feeling, and then sort of uncoupling the power to perform ordinances and the, you know, purely political organizational power to administer the church as institution. And I really think those questions might need to be addressed.
Okay.
First.
Good. Yeah. Okay. That was when you said the word first, that was cool. So this is a 1-year-old organization. And so I want to hear from the two ordained women representatives. Has she said anything that you haven't been already thinking of?
Of course not.
Okay, right. But, right. But you know, peek behind the curtain if you can give us any.
Well, just with regards to what she was saying about administration, I actually wrote a whole essay about that and did a whole podcast about it. My essay was called Ordination is the Answer to Correlation. And I don't see a problem with the priesthood being connected with administrative responsibilities if women had it. That's what I see as being the problem, is that women don't have it. So every time you say, okay, we're going to take this administrative responsibility and we're going to say now, from now on, you have to be a priesthood holder to do this. What's happened so far in the history of our church is every time we do that, women get pushed aside further and further. And so we have more and more responsibilities that we say only men can do. So my vision would be that if women were ordained, all of a sudden we would be qualified again for all of those administrative responsibilities that we're currently not qualified for.
So systematically within the group, where was your piece well received? You have a strong sense that these will be, you know, continue to be pursued, like your kind of arguments there?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that has been one of the more popular pieces that I wrote for the Exponent, and it's been passed around by a lot of different groups. And a lot of those groups that you mentioned before, that are different groups that are working on feminist issues, have passed it around. And so I think a lot of people are on board with that. There are other people. I mean, we don't have complete agreement within the group, which is part of the reason why we're not making a big deal out of this, because there are people like me who I believe that women should be ordained to the exact same office as men are holding. So women should be elders, women should be high priests, women should be apostles, women should have the possibility of becoming a prophet. I feel like that it should just be gender neutral. And there are some other people that more like the idea of having more what Christine was describing, where you have separate quorums for men and women, and so they have separate hierarchies. I don't like that at all, because I think, yeah, it would have the same problems that we have now. I imagine if we had a separate hierarchy that was only female, that we would have the same problems we've always had.
Right. Yeah, I just want to be clear that I was not advocating that structure. Right. I don't like that either. I think that's what might happen.
Yeah. But in terms of the strategic stuff that she brought about here, that this is systemic, that there are structures in place, that there might be some things that need to be done prior to this, because you ordain it, but you haven't addressed those issues. What's being talked about among the ordained women group, or just you just expect that as you naturally last longer, these will naturally get talked about?
It's definitely an ongoing conversation, because certainly none of us are of the opinion that we either have all the answers or are currently in a position to articulate exactly what it would look like if women were ordained. In part because that's something that, because we're asking our existing church leadership to consider and to take to the Lord, would be something that would come, you know, through them, from them, and hopefully with the input of others, but definitely, you know, from the existing leadership structure. And that does have some complicated problems in that, you know, we do have a systemic injustice problem, and we are trying to work within that unjust system to get more justice. And that's certainly fraught attempt. And it is a very thick wall, as Christine aptly put it, to bang one's head against. But, you know, as a strategic issue, I think the questions that we're talking about amongst ourselves right now deal with whether or not ordination would be enough to incorporate women fully. And I think, you know, the answer is no. We'd need to be very careful about how we did it. Simply ordaining women to the priesthood is not necessarily going to result in a structure that is gender just.
Yeah.
One really bad case scenario that we've talked about is, what if they just announced, okay, everyone who's been endowed in the temple, you're now called priesthood holders, and nothing else changed?
Oh, interesting.
That would be not a good scenario for us.
Yeah, interesting. Now, can I tie two ideas together? First of all, you know, a lot of Latter-day Saints will say, look at the community of Christ. There's a great example of a tradition that's made it through a transition to where there's pretty neat, you know, there's women apostles, theoretically, obviously, they could become the prophet, president of that church, and things like that, and so they did it. But we forget the growing pains, you know, that it took. And I know even after the revelation, there was a couple of years where they really, you know, how do we work this into this? How do we do all this? But the other idea I want to tie into it is that they lost upon that revelation a good chunk. There was I wish I was more up on it, but a good percentage of their congregation said, this is the last straw. The church has been liberalizing too much. We're going to break off. I think they began to call themselves remnant churches and things like that. And so I know our leaders would be very scared to sacrifice, you know, such a large percentage of people by moving too fast or moving something like this. And so I think their example is both positive and negative. And so with those two tied together, the question of strategic stuff is, you know, where Christine was focus on the systemic issues, the structural issues, you know, the tie between the administrative power, and it's not just doing ordinances and things like this. There's that issue of persuading the middle that this is not so radical as you think, that this is perfectly at one piece with the gospel. You know, one of the neat things about Frances's essay that she wrote in the collection I was talking about is she's just basically saying, we're just restoring what the early church, you know, we're only thinking about restoring what the early church did, you know, where you had the house churches with lots of female leaders. You had, you know, Junia and all the different ones who were called as prophets. You had these neat things where, you know, people are, you know, these women are baptizing left and right and they're complaining about it, but it's obvious that it happened. And so if we're a restoration church, why wouldn't we do it? And so she's kind of looking towards, you know, not only the early church, she's looking towards the early Mormonism where there was, you know, the healing gifts and all the things that you guys already have been talked about and things like this. But this idea that we just need to do more education that makes this middle group not feel like they need to double down in a rejection mode. Can you guys address that a little bit, just this idea that it'd be great to have it? I, you know, I'll state out that it's ridiculous that it isn't the case that you're fully priesthooded in every possible way. But I'm a little bit nervous that we're going to radicalize a few people against you when a few more years, just like in some ways to me, every year that people have a chance to sit with the GLBT stuff, with gender, you know, the same-sex attraction and all the different things like that. Every year that they sit with that, they feel better about it. And just like the national trend is going, the church trend is, to me, is on a really steep curve towards acceptance of those types of things. I'm just wondering if you guys are going to kind of hurt that little progress that might be happening if we've concentrated just more on education now.
Dan, can I dive in? I actually don't think that there's any need for ordained women or anybody else to persuade the middle. I think we have been hammering follow the prophet for so many decades now that if the prophet stood up and announced in conference we were doing this, we would instantly the next day have narratives from people who said, I've been praying for this for a decade and I just pulled over in my car and wept when I heard the announcement and I'm so thrilled and this is great. I mean, I think people would turn on a dime.
Okay, so you don't think the CFC, the Church Community of Christ example, would play out here? There'd probably be some leaving, but not maybe the percentage.
Very.
Okay.
You know, I actually did a little experiment on that once at the Exponent where I did a poll where I asked people, do you want the church to ordain women? And then I did another poll where I asked them, if the prophet announced that he is going to ordain women, how would you feel, pleased or upset? And
wow, good.
At the Exponent, of course, we have a feminist audience. And so the vast majority wanted women to be ordained. But also an even higher majority, to where it was almost everyone, agreed that if the prophet announced it, they would be pleased. So even people who said they don't want women to have the priesthood said that if the prophet announced it, they would be happy.
Interesting. So Christine, are you saying with that, and I think it's a great point, I'm not arguing at all. I'm just saying, are you saying that the attention needs to be towards getting access to the leaders, to persuading them, or that the work with the persuadable middle or whatever, you know, I don't know why I'm married to that term right now. That's what would come to my mind. But is it two pronged, or is it really should be a stronger prong in the direction of the hierarchy?
It's both, right? Because the men from that persuadable middle are going to be the hierarchy in a few years. And so if change is going to happen, it will happen as people who have been persuaded ascend into the hierarchy. I think there are some of the brethren who might change their minds, you know, and be persuaded to listen to women. And I think there are some of them who just, you know, are so thoroughly shaped by the culture that they grew up in and by, you know, frankly, church doctrine that we've been devoted to for a long time, that they, you know, that they couldn't even countenance the idea. And so it's both. I think it will take a long, you know, I don't think that somebody is magically going to be granted an audience with President Monson, you know, next week and talk to him for 2 hours and explain all the things to him. And he's going to say, huh, yeah, let me go pray about that. And, you know, come back and announce that, you know, that's not going to happen. It's going to take longer than that. And it's going to need some critical mass of stake presidents who are ready to go when the change is announced and who are, you know, who've been thinking about these things. So yeah, I don't think you can prioritize one over the other.
Okay. Thank you. Good.
I can speak to the issues that you talked about in persuading that persuadable middle, because I think that Christine is quite right that people, even who aren't in the middle, you know, should this come as a prophetic direction, would do the work to get a testimony of it. If they didn't respond that way immediately, they quickly do the work so that they could be in line, you know, with the prophet's direction. But there is the reality that we are a community, and we're a community that draws our leadership from the general membership. And so having a large majority of church members who are at the very least sympathetic to the discussion is vital. And I think that we touched on this earlier in the podcast, but that's something that Ordained Women has been doing in its very short, you know, existence so far, is that by putting it on the table, it enables us to have conversations that we haven't been having before. And so this is very much part of that living with it process that will be required to get this change. None of us expect that during priesthood session this year or on the Sunday morning following that women will be granted the priesthood. But this action is part of putting that conversation out there and helping right. people imagine what it would look like. Because how it would look is that women would also attend this meeting, right? Mm-hmm. Women wouldn't be barred from participating in a general meeting of the church simply because they are women. And so there's that aspect. I think also, though, when we are catering to the lowest common denominator, we are really missing a lot of opportunities to really be creative and in touch with the radical vision that is Zion and that is what we are called to as saints. And I think that we need to be wildly open to what our heavenly parents might direct us to consider as a community. You know, for the saints in the early church and for many saints now, contemplating the, you know, full communal sharing of property was and is an incredibly difficult concept. And yet we've been told that it's an essential part of building a salvation-based community and a community that will be exalted. And so we need to, you know, wrap our minds around it. And I think that's true with all kinds of radical equality, both between genders, between races, between socioeconomic classes. We need to live with the reality of being fully equal with people we don't like. We have to learn to be united in our differences. And I think that having these conversations is part of that process. I also think that, to your point further about living, you know, for example, you use the example of living with LGBTQ members and learning how to be more accepting and how to be more inclusive of them in our communities. That is an example of one of the ways that the church has had a tendency in, you know, the 20th and 21st centuries here of being a follower of the social justice revolution and not a leader. And I think that as a church that claims to have prophetic leadership and claims to be led by Christ, we need to be looking for ways in which we can be leaders in social justice, not tagalongs in the work that others are doing.
Preach it. Definitely. I want that too. But yeah, that's probably so, not. Go ahead. I just said when you say stuff like that, you know, that just turns that just turns a lot of people off. Do you know what I mean? Because we're never going to be in the lead when it comes to conservative. We're a conservative church. Organizations of this size are naturally conservative. You know, when you're lean and mean, you can be out in the front. Tendency now is to, you know, is to tag along. And I don't know. I think a lot of people don't like it when you tie it to, well, aren't we a prophetically led church? Yeah, we are, but I don't know. Again, that one doesn't feel strategic to me to say it that way. Does that make sense?
Sure. I definitely think that it's threatening to say it that way because right. It suggests that there are responsibilities to be met that we might not be meeting now. And that's a criticism and that is challenging and that can be upsetting. And I think conversations with, you know, people in the middle are really important to have. And it's certainly not, you have to have a mix of speaking to where people are and speaking to where you want people to be.
Exactly.
So, you know, for me, it's using a mix of language in that sense. But I also think that we have a lot of potential as a community to be more radical than I think you're giving us credit for. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe. No, that's good.
But, you know, I think that there is room for that among us as a people historically. And I think that there are people who'd be willing to have that tapped now. Not necessarily, you know, in a political sense, but, you know, in a broader sense of social justice and in looking to create vibrant communities that don't function the same way that our communities in the world function, you know, because we're trying to build something inside this world, but separate from it, you know? And so I think there's a lot in Mormonism and a lot among members who, you know, I think some of us are looking to answer that call.
And if the switch were turned at all, they would jump, like you and Christine have said. Yeah, I think so too. There's a chance for bigger steps.
Can I just disagree a tiny bit? So I was just going to say that I think it's easy to think that that prophetic leadership always should be in the vanguard of social change, and I think that often that is the case. Clearly, Jesus was someone who led, who was, you know, at the bleeding edge of social justice in his time, and it's strange to have a church that seems so conservative and not in the vanguard that claims the mantle of and the leadership of Christ. But, you know, God loves his stodgy conservative children too. And
nice.
And he expects his, you know, liberal, eager, change embracing children to learn to love them as well. And so to the extent that our church provides an opportunity for that to happen in a society where change is moving really, really fast and at a speed that is, you know, really discomforting for many people whose temperaments, you know, or upbringing or, you know, for whatever reason are not comfortable making some of those changes, they need time and space and love too. And so I think it's perfectly possible that a prophetic church could in this moment be fairly conservative.
Good. Well, that makes me feel better about my little question there back to Danielle on her comment. I was regretting it, but thank you, because that really does help broaden it, and I appreciated how well you handled my comment too, Danielle. So thank you for that. It was a fun little sidebar we've had here. That's nice.
And I think that's a really good point and goes back to something that I hope that has been clear from what April and I have been saying, is that we see this as an ongoing conversation and a conversation that requires love and respect on both sides.
Good. Hey, I promised you guys about 90 minutes. We're probably going to be a little bit longer than that, but what would you guys bring up that hasn't been brought up? Is there any final thoughts that anyone has or a new area that we'd like to discuss? I'll start with you, April.
Sure. One thing that we've talked about a lot among ordained women that we haven't talked about here is that there's a kind of a comment that we hear from church leaders a lot about how happy Mormon women are and how content we are in the roles that they've given us. Mm-hmm. This is something that you'll hear feminist advocates talk a lot about how in 1997, Gordon B. Hinckley said that women could get the priesthood. He says if the only way that it would only happen through revelation, and the reporter asked, so you have to get a revelation? And Hinckley said, yes, but there's no agitation for that. We don't find it. Our women are happy. They're satisfied. And so he kind of implied that they're not even looking into that because we women are so happy the way we are, and we're not interested in priesthood.
And the only ones who wouldn't be are the sinners or have some other, they're really not all in.
Well, he didn't say that outright.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, but isn't that the implication in so many minds?
So more recently, just after Ordained Women was launched, our current General Relief Society president, Sister Linda K. Burton, said something very similar. She said, I don't think women are after the authority. I think they're after the blessings and are happy. There it is again, that word happy, that they can access the blessings and power of the priesthood. And she was talking about access them through men or access them through our own internal power, but not with any authority. And so our leaders keep on saying these things about how happy we Mormon women are and how much we don't want authority. And that's part of the reason why it's become apparent to us that we really need to express ourselves a little bit more boldly, a little bit more publicly, and actually agitate the way President Hinckley said we weren't doing. We need to actually agitate so that they know that we're not happy with the status quo, that we really are interested in priesthood authority, and we really aren't happy being excluded this way.
And that you're faithful members of the church, that you're not the fringe that we would do better without.
You don't have to be perfectly happy to be faithful. So we are faithful, and we are faithfully looking for ways to help our church.
Right. Well, that's what you guys are, that's what you're trying to communicate. Yeah. Well, that was awesome from April, and I appreciate that. Listeners, just to let you know, for the last 15, 20 minutes, we've had her internet go in and out, and we've just lost her for the call. I think we're just going to give up now. But thank her for being on, and we're basically heading towards the end here too, but thank you, April. That's why that one may feel a little bit cut off. Let me continue a little thought I was trying to add, or was planning to add right at the end of her thought is, yes, the presence of you agitating, of being there, of saying we're not quite as la 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 as you guys are making us out to be. So the fact that you're faithful women is so important to me, and I love that you guys are structuring it that way. So, Danielle, any final thoughts either on my comment there or just where you would go to end?
Yes, and I think that's important to us as well. We are women who, and men, because there definitely are men who also have profiles that ordain women and who have been allies and have helped in us in various organizing activities. So I do want to emphasize that we are happy to have male allies, but it really is important to us that people understand that we are individuals who love the church, who love the gospel, and who are sharing our thoughts and our hopes because of that love. We feel like this is, in a very serious sense, a love letter to the Mormonism that many of us have been raised in, and some of us have, converted to in our adult lives, to say that we see it as a vibrant religious movement and a church that is open for all those who are looking to draw closer to God, and that for us, Mormonism really speaks to our desires to find spiritual nourishment and to access Christ, and that when for us, and I think for a lot of people who suggest ways in which they think that the church could better serve them, it's coming from a place of love for what has already been given to us by the church, and a hope that we can expand those offerings for ourselves and for our sisters and for our brothers.
Awesome.
Two, I'd just like people to know that we do see this as a conversation that we want to have with the community and want to encourage members of our faith community to have with one another and within their families and their communities. And even when, as we expect, it often is, even when those conversations are about their disagreement with us, because we just, we really think that these conversations are healthy and important for all of us to participate in, so that we can be, you know, more supportive and inclusive, whether a change happens in the near future or not. Simply allowing mm-hmm. space for people to speak their truths and their perspectives is in and of itself a gift that we can give one another, and it's a gift that we can give one another without the need for any top-down instruction. In fact, it only really works when we do it for ourselves at the individual level. So I just really yep. hope that people are willing to engage in these conversations with the people around them, and that hopefully we can all remember to do that with a great deal of charity and understanding for the fact that we all have different experiences.
Thank you so much. Loved having you on, and again, loved having April too. Sorry we've lost her from the call. Christine, where would you finish up if you have any last thought?
I hope we are at a moment in the church's development where there's space for these conversations and where they won't provoke an enormous backlash. I'm afraid that we might not be.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about the backlash that has been out there.
Yeah, but that actually doesn't matter very much. You know, the backlash that is going to matter is official, and that hasn't happened yet, and it might not. I don't want to be ruled by fear. I think that we ought to be ruled by love and faith and hope and all of those things. And so I want there to be space for this conversation. I also want my mom and other more conservative women to not feel disrespected and to not feel that their sacrifices, that we don't appreciate them, that we don't value the lessons that they've taught us about, you know, what it means to serve, even though you don't have a voice in decision making, and you know what that kind of radical Christian submission might look like. So I want there to be space for all of those perspectives. And then I think that ordained women has taken on a huge. Oh, and I'm sorry. I meant to say also that I don't think there's any way to know whether we are at that point where that can happen without trying it. And so,
right. Nice.
You know, as much as I have most often been an advocate of a more gradualist approach, you know, that clearly hasn't worked for several decades. And so you can understand people not feeling like, you know, why should we keep doing the same things that we've been doing for 40 years and hope that we're going to get a different response this time.
Right, right.
So, you know, there really is no way to know except for, you know, brave people being willing to step out and test the waters. I think the problem is that the task is twofold. It is to to get people's attention, to get the attention of people who have the power to make change. But then once you have their attention, to still be speaking a language they recognize and understand. So the language of feminism or rights may be foreign to them. You know, we just have to be able to speak to each other in a common language, and developing that language is part of the task that I think ordained women is trying to do, and I think everyone else is trying to do. And I think that, you know, even these horrendous conversations on the internet are at least showing us the boundaries, the edges of where our common language extends. And hopefully we can widen the stakes of Zion to make more space in there for a richer and more descriptive language.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll love having you on always, my friend.
Thanks. Okay.
Well, thank you not only to you, Christine, but everybody. I've just loved the call. I feel elated. I feel lighter from this call. I feel like this has been a great discussion. We've got to all the things. We haven't solved the world, but I love what Christine just said that at the end. You got to try something, and that's the only way that we're going to know where we truly are. And so that's kind of a neat thing for me. You know, I came into this certainly as more of the advocates for the baby steps, the concentration on, you know, the average member of the church who, you know, just needs to have this feel more normalized to them, and that's the way to do it, so that when something, you know, more dynamic happens, there's less of a knee-jerk reaction against it. But I'm actually really, even before this, I was obviously very excited to see what happens on October 5th and in the days and weeks that follow. Anyway, you guys have moved me, so thank you, Danielle and April, for helping me support the Ordained Women movement more than I had before, so thank you.
Thanks very much, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I also feel like it's been really productive and helpful, and I feel like hopefully it will help everyone who's, you know, in favor of women's ordination to be able to see why someone could be thoughtfully cautious about it while, you know, supporting the idea, and vice versa, you know.
Thank you. Well, podcast listeners, we appreciate all you do. Please listen after listening to this. We hope you'll jump in at the blog and offer your comments. I know there's been an explosion online, but we hope that you'll at least carry on a few pieces, especially in reaction to specific things that we've said here. We always love to have our blog going. And while you're there, always appreciate it when you click donate or subscribe or in some way support financially, because it's a big piece of how I'm putting things together in my own life. So appreciate any contributions. Christine, thank you again.
Sure.
Danielle, thank you. April, sorry we lost you, but good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening. All is well.